Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Amadeo, principal of the Amadeo Law Firm, and thanks for joining us today for our webinar covering sales taxes and federal government contracts. Now, before we get started, I'm going to say a few words about me and my law firm. So I've been practicing law for over 20 years and am the founding partner of the Amadeo Law Firm. And the firm has locations in Washington, D.C. and in Maryland. And its primary focus is on federal government contracting. So we help clients with all of their government contracting legal needs, and that includes negotiations with teaming partners, post-award negotiations with contracting officers, general FAR and DFARS compliance. And we also help clients protect their technology in their dealings with the government and their private sector partners. Now, we'll provide you with my contact information at the end of the presentation. So if you have any questions on any of the information that I'm presenting today, feel free to reach out to me after the presentation. So today we're talking about sales taxes and how they intersect with federal government contracts. Now, when it comes to information that new or experienced contractors think about when they're considering becoming government contractors, or when they're preparing bids or proposals, it's not uncommon for the issue of sales taxes to be overlooked. And in fact, even some experienced contractors, when the issue is broached, rely on an assumption that sales taxes don't apply to supplies or materials or equipment or hardware that they buy in order to meet federal government contract requirements. Now, as we will touch on more in a few minutes, there's no blanket immunity or exemption for federal government contractors under federal law. And federal contractors that hold on to the assumption that they are exempt from sales taxes, when in fact they may not be, they run the risk of eating away, or in some cases eviscerating, any profit margins that they might have expected from a contracting effort. So today's webinar is aimed at clarifying misconceptions about sales taxes on federal government contractors. Now, one reason perhaps why even experienced contractors may be grappling with sales tax issues for the first time may be the Supreme Court's Wayfair decision in 2018. Now, before Wayfair, some contractors and their out-of-state vendors and suppliers felt it safe to assume that interstate transactions were not subject to state sales taxes. But in Wayfair, the Supreme Court ruled that states can charge sales taxes on purchases from out-of-state vendors. So some vendors may now just be catching up to the Wayfair decision and including sales taxes on their invoices to their out-of-state customers. So let's touch on the federal government's immunity to state and local taxes. Now, the federal government's immunity from state taxation stretches all the way back to a Supreme Court case. In that 1819 case called McCullough versus Maryland, Justice John Marshall wrote a decision that ultimately held that a state's taxation on the federal government violates the Constitution's Supremacy Clause. And so that McCullough case gave birth to the principle that the federal government is immune to state and local taxation. And this concept of federal immunity is actually reflected in FAR at Rule 29.302, which says that in general, purchases and leases made by the federal government are immune from state and local taxation. So if the federal government is immune from state taxes when it buys things directly, well, what about federal government contractors? Well, a few years after the McCullough decision, again, Justice Marshall in Osborne versus Bank of the United States posed the question of whether a government contract was immune from state taxation, but he left that question linger without actually answering it. And it wasn't until a later decision in 1937 by the Supreme Court in James versus Davo Contracting that the court refused to extend federal government immunity to a federal government contractor. And then in a later decision in U.S. versus New Mexico, which upheld a use tax on a federal government contractor, the Supreme Court put a final nail in it when it said that there's only one circumstance where the federal tax immunity applies. And that's when the tax is imposed on the U.S. government itself, or an agency or instrument of the U.S. government that is so close to the government that they can't be realistically viewed as separate entities. Now, on this issue of agency, and when it is that a business acts as an agent of the federal government, FAR 29.303 sets out a general proposition, and that is that prime contractors and subcontractors are not normally to be designated as agents of the federal government for purposes of claiming federal government immunity from local sales taxes. And on those rare occasions that a person or contractor serves as an agent for the purposes of a government contract, FAR 29.303 says that that designation has to be approved by the head of the agency. Now, all of this is to say that federal government contractors shouldn't just assume that their purchases under a federal government contract are immune from sales taxes. And perhaps they may be better served, absent any other information, if they make the opposite assumption. So if federal contractors aren't immune to sales taxes as a matter of federal law, they're going to have to look to state and local laws to see if they are exempt from state or local sales taxes. And in fact, that's what FAR 29.303B instructs contractors and subcontractors to do. Now, we're not going to do a deep dive into sales taxes, and that's way beyond the scope of this webinar. And for every state that imposes a sales tax, we would need a considerable amount of time to go through each set of laws. But for this webinar, and more specifically for the purposes of alerting federal contractors to issues that they should consider and talk about with their consultants or their accountants and lawyers, we'll talk about a few general concepts, and then we'll look at the law in a few states. Now, when federal government contractors start off determining whether they may have to pay a sales tax, they should have in mind a few considerations. First, they should be aware that there are only a handful of states that don't apply a sales tax. And second, sales taxes generally apply to sales that occur within a state's borders. Now, it may be unclear where sales has occurred when the vendor and contractor are in different states. But many, if not most, states have adopted uniform code rules that say that in the absence of an agreement stating otherwise, a sale takes place at the location where an item is delivered or received. Now, the third thing that contractors should know is who or what the sales tax is imposed on. Now, in some states, the sales tax is imposed on the seller, And in some states, it's imposed on the buyer. And in some states, it's actually imposed on the transaction. Now, in any event, whether the tax is on the buyer or the seller or the transaction, typically it's the seller's obligation to collect the tax and then remit it to the state. Now, I've touched on a few FAR rules, but before we get into state and local rules, I just want to briefly summarize a few other places in FAR where sales taxes are implicated. So FAR 29.401 instructs contracting officers to insert either 52.2293 or 52.2294 in fixed price contracts that are over the simplified acquisition threshold. Now, the clause at 52.2293 says that a fixed price is all inclusive. That means it includes state and local taxes that were in effect on the contract date. And 229.4, which may be inserted, but only in a non-competitive contract, also says that a fixed price includes all state and local taxes that were in effect on the contract date. But it also allows for a contractor to recover after imposed taxes. Now, after imposed taxes are new taxes or are an increase in taxes or are taxes that are imposed if an exclusion or exemption has been revoked. So even this clause doesn't allow for a contractor to go back and ask for more money to cover sales taxes that were already applicable on the contract date and for which the contractor either didn't obtain an exemption or wasn't eligible for an exemption. So in fixed price contracts, if there are any sales taxes that apply as of the contract date to the contractor's purchases under the government contract, well, the contractor is going to have to pay for it from the fixed price that it receives from the government. So hopefully, the government contractor has factored sales taxes in its pricing to the government. Otherwise, if it hasn't factored sales taxes in its pricing, well, the contractor is going to have to pay for those taxes out of the contract profits, or worse, it's going to have to pay for it out of its own pocket. Now, under cost reimbursement at contracts, under FAR 31.204-41, state and local taxes are an allowable cost unless the contractor is eligible for a tax exemption. So in that case, the government expects the contractor to claim the exemption and pass the savings on to the government. So as you can see, the rules favor a contractor that's on top of the sales tax issues at the outset, even before a bid is submitted. And even under a cost reimbursement contract, if a contractor misses an exemption, or if it comes across sales tax issues after the contract closeout, well, it may end up having to eat the sales tax issue liabilities. So assuming a federal contractor has figured out which state its purchases have occurred in, and that state is not one of the states that doesn't impose a sales tax, well, the determination of whether a federal government contractor is going to have to pay a sales tax generally is going to involve a two-step process. First, the contractor needs to know whether the items or services that it's buying to perform under the government contract are even subject to a state sales tax. So in general, states typically impose a tax on sales or retail sales. And these sales typically involve the purchase of what is called tangible personal property. Now, personal property isn't limited to an individual's property. In many states, the term personal property is used to distinguish something from real property, like land or real estate. So the term personal property includes a business's property. And the term tangible personal property typically is defined to cover any tangible item, with few exceptions. Now, in some states, those exceptions may include pharmaceuticals or certain clothing items or certain health-related items. But by and large, in most states, if you can touch it, if you can carry it, or if you can see it, well, in most states, the item is going to be tangible personal property. And that includes things like heavy equipment and supplies. Now, a lot of states also apply a sales tax to certain services. But unlike with tangible personal property, when it comes to tangible services, the categories of services that are subject to a sales tax in most states tend to be very narrow. So now let's say a government contractor is going to buy something that's tangible from a supplier or a vendor, and that purchase qualifies as a retail sale, and the item qualifies as tangible personal property. Well, unless the sale of that item is subject to a state or local exemption, well, that purchase is going to be subject to a sales tax. So the next step that a contractor has to take is to determine if there is a sales tax exemption that may apply. Now, often if there is an exemption that applies to a contractor's purchase, sales tax laws will require the contractor to obtain or issue on its own an exemption certificate and present it to the vendor or supplier to notify the vendor or supplier that it qualifies for the exemption, then it shouldn't be taxed. Now, some states, not all, though, have exemptions that apply specifically to government contractors or to items that a contractor buys that become part of a deliverable to the U.S. government. And several of these states with these government contractor exemptions require as a condition of the exemption that the government contract state that title of the items that the contractors purchase pass to the government. So in those states, contractors have to look at their contracts to see if they include the necessary title transfer provisions in order to take advantage of these exemptions. Now, and as an example, FAR Clause 52.245 states that for items that are purchased by a contractor that are direct costs under a cost reimbursement contract, well, title to those items transfer to the government upon delivery. So if this clause is inserted in a government contract, it may be sufficient to enable a contractor's purchases to be eligible for these kinds of sales tax exemptions. Now, even if a state doesn't have exemptions that apply specifically to government contractors, federal government contractors might still be able to take advantage of exemptions that apply to purchasers generally, like exemptions for resellers and exemptions for manufacturers. So again, we don't have enough time to cover the sales tax rules in all states. And federal contractors or their advisors should have an idea of what the rules are in the states where they tend to do most of their purchases. But by way of example, if we look at the rules in Maryland and apply our two-step process, a contractor should first ask whether an item is even taxable. Now, we said earlier that contractors should adopt a posture that assumes that most of the tangible items that they purchase in order to perform under a contract is subject to state sales taxes. Well, the Maryland statute on sales taxes expressly adopts a rebuttable presumption that any sale in the state is subject to a state sales tax. But setting aside that presumption. Maryland, like other jurisdictions, applies a sales tax to retail sales. And the definition of a retail sale includes the sale of any tangible personal property, which in turn is defined pretty broadly to include material property of any nature. So at first glance, we're back in that realm where most things that you can see or touch or read are taxable. Now, Maryland also imposes a sales tax on a narrow and targeted list of 13 kinds of services. And it's a seemingly random and eclectic list. It includes commercial laundering and cleaning of textiles, providing 1-900 telephone services, pay-per-view services, security services, and telephone answering services. So if a government contractor buys a tangible item in order to perform under a government contract, as I said earlier, it may seem at first glance that the contractor's purchase is a retail sale that's subject to a sales tax. But the definition of retail sales under the Maryland rules include a few carve-outs, including a carve-out for resellers who sell items in the same form that they're purchased. Now, the idea behind this is that the same item shouldn't be taxed over and over and over as it moves along the distribution chain, and it should only be taxed once when it gets to the ultimate user. Now, Maryland's sales tax law also carves out items that are used in a production activity that involves manufacturing and assembling. And the idea behind this is kind of the same, namely that a material or component that's used to manufacture something shouldn't be taxed over and over during the manufacturing process. Now, under Maryland's rules, resellers and companies that are involved in production activities need to issue resale certificates or provide a production activity certification to vendors so that the vendors don't charge them the sales tax. Now, assuming that a contractor's purchase of an item is a retail sale and doesn't fall within any of the carve-outs and exceptions, the next step is for the contractor to look for any applicable exemptions. Well, the only specific exemption for federal contractors in Maryland is an exemption that applies to the sale of testing equipment that the contractor is going to use and then transfer to the government under a DoD contract. Now, as for other exemptions, although most are fairly targeted, a few that may apply to government contractors are the exemption for purchases of research materials and the exemption for purchases of manufacturing and research machinery. So to sum up, although there's only one exemption that's targeted to government contractors in Maryland, government contractors that are, for example, simply reselling items or that are engaged in research and manufacturing may be able to take advantage of those related exemptions to claim that their purchases under a government contract should not be subject to the sales tax. So let's briefly look at another example of sales taxes. Like Maryland, Virginia's sales tax law imposes a sales tax on tangible personal property, and it also carves out resales. Now, it also excludes from taxation purchases of materials that are part of the manufacturing or refining and processing of tangible personal property. But the exclusion in Virginia is as a separate exemption rather than as a carve-out from what is considered a retail sale. Now, unlike Maryland, where there's only one narrow exemption that's specific to federal government contractors, government contractors that buy in Virginia can rely on a fairly broad exemption that applies to any tangible property that is for the use or consumption by the U.S. government. Now, the exemption doesn't say that the item has to be purchased directly by the U.S. government, and it also doesn't come out and mention government contractors either. It just says that the tangible item that it's purchased by somebody or something has to be for the U.S. government's use or consumption. Well, thankfully, there's a Virginia regulation specifically for government contractors that clears things up and that goes into significant detail with examples in order to explain when a contractor's purchase is going to be considered for the government's use and not the contractor's use. So, for example, the regulation clarifies that a purchase for resale means when a government contractor buys tangible personal property with the intent of selling it to the government. But a resale also includes the purchase of tangible personal property that's incorporated into a manufactured product that's sold to the government. Now, lastly, the Virginia regulation addresses the issue of mixed government contracts. And those are contracts under which the contractor provides both services and tangible items to the government. Now, let's take a quick detour and talk about why this matters. So, as we touched on earlier, the goal of many state sales tax laws is to tax an item when it reaches the ultimate user or consumer. So in the case of a seller that sells a tangible item, it makes sense that the tangible item or the tangible items that make up components of the item are not taxable until they reach the ultimate customer. And if that customer is the government, well, they may not be taxed at all. But when a seller is selling a service, maybe it's a consultant or it's providing professional services, well, tangible items that the service provider may buy in order to provide the service, for example, computers or printers or telephone or software, well, those tangible items are used by the seller and not the seller's customers. So it makes sense that tangible items bought by a service provider typically are taxable and not exempt at the point that the service provider purchases them. So applying these concepts to government contractors, when a government contractor is only providing a service to the government, it may anticipate that the tangible items that it buys to provide that service, for example, again, computers or printers, may be subject to a sales tax when the contractor buys them because it's the contractor and not the government that's going to be using the items. Now, conversely, if the contractor is only providing a tangible item to the government, it may anticipate that its purchase of the items and its parts may not be taxed when the contractor purchases them if they are part of deliverables to the government because it's the government and not the contractor that's going to be using them. But what happens when a contractor is selling both tangible items and services to the government under a mixed government contract? Well, that's the situation that the Virginia regulation addresses. And specifically, the regulation applies a true object test to determine what the true underlying object or purpose is of the transaction with the government. And it applies this on a task order by task order basis. So the fact that under one task order, the true object is the provision of services to the government won't prevent a contractor from buying tangible items on a tax-free basis to meet requirements under a different task order where the true object is to provide a tangible item to the government. Now, again, the Virginia regulation has plenty of examples to show how this plays out. And there are a number of other states that apply some version of the true object test to purchases under mixed contracts. So the last things I want to touch on today are a few best practices for dealing with sales tax issues. Now, the first practice is what we've been alluding to all along, and that is that contractors and vendors should address sales tax issues upfront at the earliest opportunity. So a contractor should already know when it's submitting its bid whether the jurisdiction that it's doing business in imposes sales tax on the items that it's going to have to buy in order to perform under the contract. And also, when a contractor talks to its vendors and gets pricing sheets or quotes, particularly as it's preparing its bids, the contractor should make it a point to ask the vendor whether the vendor is going to take the position that a sales tax applies to the items or services that the contractor is buying. Now, vendors should volunteer, if they haven't been asked, whether they are going to take the position that the items or services that they're selling to the contractor are going to be subject to a sales tax, because nothing leaves a bad taste in the mouth of a contractor more than having to eat its profits on a contract because a vendor has played hide the ball with its pricing. Now, the second thing the contractor should do, if the rules in the states allow them, is include protective language in their purchase orders or contracts that will mitigate sales tax surprises. So there are just jurisdictions like Maryland, for example, in which a seller is allowed to pay the sales tax instead of the buyer. And there may be jurisdictions that permit a vendor to offer all-inclusive pricing for certain items. Now, to be clear, there are some jurisdictions in which neither of these practices are permitted. But if the jurisdiction allows the seller to pay the tax, contractors may want to include language in their agreements that ensures that if the seller suddenly reverses itself and takes the position that a sales tax should be paid, well, in that instance, the vendor will pay the tax or reimburse the contractor or give a rebate or a credit to the contractor. And lastly, contractors should have sales tax exclusion and exemption certificates ready to be handed to their vendors or suppliers. Now, in some states, issuing a certificate like a resale certificate may require the contractor to first register with the state as a reseller. And so to avoid any delays in coming to terms with a vendor on pricing or the applicability of a sales tax, a contractor should have already taken the steps needed to issue the certificates and to provide them to their vendors. Well, that's all I have for my presentation today. I want to thank everyone for listening. And if you have any questions about the presentation, my information is up there on the slide. So please don't hesitate to contact me.